mechanics, or for that matter, most other subjects, eventually the question of conventions will come and get you, and it came and got me. I defined Fourier transform in a particular way because I wanted to preserve the norm of something, and I have realized that when you come and do path integrals, this will cause trouble. So I would like to change my conventions about Fourier transform to the following. Of course, the new conventions cause trouble. It's just a different kind of trouble. So I would like to change the momentum space representation of a wave function to be the following. Make sure I really do have a minus sign there. That's right. And therefore, the inverse is that, of course, means that there is going to be a slight problem with normalization, which you can see from the following facts. The resolution of unity in X space, we still want to be this. And of course, consequence of that means that it is conventional and normal to normalize the wave functions so that this is equal to 1. That has the following consequence for inserting a complete set of states over P. This will be the integral dP, P, P, now over 2 pi h bar. A consequence of which is that the integral of psi star P, psi of P, naturally comes with a 1 over 2 pi h bar, and it is that thing that is equal to 1. So that means that the normalization of momentum space is not, if this is 1, the Fourier transform will give you something which is normalized to 2 pi h bar with the obvious dp factor. If you don't do this, when you do the path integral, you will get mysterious factors of root 2 pi h bar appearing in all kinds of places that you really don't want them to appear. It's not wrong, it just will cause you difficulty. So rather than causing all of us difficulty, I'll change it things around to go this way. So are we all happy about that? So now let's pursue the question of the path integral. The idea, as we said before, was to consider time evolution operator from some final state, well, from some initial state given by the position xi at ti, to go to some final state xf at time tf. And the way that we said we were going to do this was to divide the time interval up into a series of n, large n, very tiny steps. So here is the basic idea. Here is t initial. Then you have t1, t2, t3, tn minus 1. T final. This will be correspond to xf, xn minus 1, x3, x2, x1, x initial. So each of these things you can label by xj, tj, j being corresponding to each of these individual points. So you can say that xn tn is the last one. I'll use those interchangeably. We're interested in the limit as n goes to infinity. So perhaps the easiest thing to do is to think of some little time interval, delta t, separating each of these steps. So that if you wanted to calculate delta t, that's just going to be the total time interval, tf minus ti divided by capital N. So notice that there are n steps in all of this. Because the elements of u, yes?
I was wondering, if we prove that, you know, the composition of those steps is equal to the time evolution operator as a whole,
right?
Why would it be equal to anything else if we limit, that take the limit of n is going to infinity? Why?
It couldn't really be anything else. I think the key insight is that there is something useful to be gained by doing it this way. What that useful thing is not yet really completely apparent. Okay. I mean, we all agree that this is an obvious thing to do. It makes perfect sense. It perhaps looks initially a bit complicated because we're going to have a large number of these steps. So we rewrite this using the group property as x final u of t final Tn minus 1, xn minus 1, xn minus 1, u of Tn minus 1, Tn minus 2, xn minus 2, and then we keep going, and I want to get rid of this because this is going to be in the way. Actually, I really didn't want to do that. I try to do too many things at once. X a final, T final, Tn minus 1, U of Tn minus 1, Tn minus 2, U of T2, T1, U of T1, T initial, X initial. That's really what I wanted to do. And there will be N of these objects corresponding to each of the N steps. Now what you do is you insert a complete set of states, x, between each of these u's. So that you end up with X F U T F T I X N minus 1 T N minus 1 X N minus 1 U T N minus 1 T N minus 2 X N minus 2 X N minus 2 and then you keep going till you get down to here. We're going to have an x2, u, t2, t1, x1, x1, u, t1, t initial, x initial. If you want this to be the same as this, you have to integrate over all of the x x is in the middle. So you have an integral over the product from j is, well, xi and xf are fixed, but you're going to have to integrate over all of the x1s, the x2s, up to the xn minus 2 and the xn minus 1. So this is dxj, and you integrate from 1, j is 1, up to n minus 1. And it's at this point that I didn't really want to have any factors of root 2 pi h bar. Now that expression is not quite so easy as you might have thought, because we have to calculate the matrix element between states of different x of the time evolution operator. And remember that u is something like e to the I Hamiltonian time interval, which we just call delta t, over h bar. Hamiltonian, if you think about it, involves both p and x. So whilst there isn't really a problem with the x's, there's going to be a problem with the p's. So the trick that you use next is to change some of these things into p's. So I would like to change all of the right-hand states, not this one, but all of the other ones. This one, x2 up to xn minus 2, xn minus 1, into a set of p's. So every time I see an x on the right-hand side of something, I want to change that into pj, pj, xj, summed over all pj with a factor of 2 pi h bar in it. And that I want to do everywhere except here. So what you will end up with
is there are 3 different 1 operators.
I want to use the same index because I want to label the same interval here. So I'm thinking about here, I'm taking one of these things, say this one. So I want to change the label x3 to p3 at that point. So I actually want to use the same label. I am not going to sum over these j's.
Yep.
So the idea is just to use j as a label of which set I'm at. So if you do this, you will end up with the sum from j, sorry, the product from j is 1 to n minus 1 of dxj. Now let's think about the p's. There are going to be n of these things, so it'll be vpj over 2 pi h bar. J is 1 to n. X final. U of p final t n minus 1. T n minus T n minus 1, T n minus 1, x n minus 1, x n minus 1, u of T n minus 1, n minus 2, P n minus 2, P n minus 2, x n minus 2, and then you keep going till you get down to x initial. Well, I guess we should call this P initial. We'll still have to write the last one in. X1 UT1 T initial. Then we have P initial, X initial. So you can see that there really are N of those steps. Now things start to get smaller. Each of these things we can now evaluate. So we find a whole collection of things that look like Pn minus 1, Xn minus 1, here, here, everywhere. So every time you see one of those, you just simply want to replace it by the appropriate function. So record that over here, otherwise we get into a mess.
The initial state,
is that, I think we do need to do it to the initial state, because each of these matrix elements must have an X on the left and a P on the right. Every single one of them. We've got two kinds of things. P, J, X, J, and P, X, J, U of T, J, T, J minus 1 of X of P, J minus 1. If I said something else, I did not mean it. Now, did I do something stupid here? No, I didn't do anything stupid. That's absolutely what I wanted to do. Right, so the next step is to identify what these objects are, these particular matrix elements. P with X is easy. Is this going to be E to the I? Pj, xj over h bar. This one is a bit more complicated. Let's think of particular Hamiltonians that we're interested in. So we had here the Hamiltonian h is some function of momentum and position. Yes?
Is it something you just need to work out, like, even
Fourier
transform?
Yeah, we've talked this before. It's basically, okay, what is the eigenstate of momentum in the X representation?
Okay.
Look at that.
Do it over and over again. Remember, someone asked me about this. How do you do it? Would you ask me to compute the matrix element of the operator P between those two states? That's what you get. Now let's look at this U. So what Hamiltonian should we pick? Since we're going to be doing non-relativistic quantum mechanics all the time, the thing to do is pick P squared over 2m plus any function of position you like. Some potential P of X. You could have picked a whole collection of other things if you really wanted to. For example, if you were going to do relativistic quantum mechanics, you could have picked this thing to be some relativistic expression, and no doubt Dr. Tong, when he shows up, will do precisely that. But let's suppose we're just going to do this. Then this expression is xj e to the I p squared over 2m plus v of x delta t, small time interval, over h bar. Then you get v j minus 1.
because this thing is very, very small, we can just expand this out as being 1 plus. No, I don't want to do that. This V of x can act left, and I will get e to the I V of x j delta t over h bar. So that's that term acting in that direction. Then from this term, this is an eigenstate of P, so if it acts to the right, I will get e to the I dj minus 1 squared delta t over 2m h bar. And then there will be the state x j t j minus 1. Now at this point, you will realize that I have ignored the Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula, because you say, oh, but there shouldn't be some commutators of this thing with this thing. And the answer is, yes, but they are irrelevant. Remember that e to the a plus b is essentially what we've got here, e to the a plus b, looks something like e to the b, e to the a, and then there are all kinds of terms involving commutators. So there will be an e to the half of a of b commutator, a commutator with b. And then there will be things like a commutator of a with b, and so forth. But they're irrelevant, because this thing and that thing are both proportional to delta t. So since A and B are proportional to delta t, then their product looks like delta t squared. And so in the limit that n goes to infinity, delta t squared is ignorable compared to delta t, and we don't have to bother with such terms. So all these higher order terms don't contribute. Terms from the commutator. Do not contribute. As n goes to infinity, or if you like, delta t goes to zero, same thing. So this thing is just this in this particular limit. Then there is this term here that we have to deal with. So all we've done is we've said v of x acts on the left, gives me this function of position. This one acts on the right, gives me that function of momentum. Commutators vanish, and then you're left with this thing. But this thing, we already know, this is a complex function of that, but evaluated to a slightly different position. So we get e to the I v of xj delta t over h bar, e to the I pj minus 1 squared delta t over 2m h bar, and then this one is e to the minus I pj minus 1 xj over h bar in that limit. If, of course, you dealt with finite delta t, there would be some extra stuff which would make your life very complicated. So we need to substitute these in absolutely everywhere.
Why couldn't you just write the Hamiltonian as of x plus v squared over 2m and not care about the formula?
You can do that once you've seen it. I couldn't really do that to start with, because I wouldn't have known that the commutative terms disappeared.
So the...
and there will be one catch, because of... It's largely true, but there is one place where there is a slight difficulty which we have to overcome. So we don't really want... There's nothing wrong with doing that. We have to know that something is apt to get messed up if we're not careful. Sorry, you were going to say something.
Oh, so the... I always forget the name of it, but formula that you wrote over there. That's not been about matrices, that's about any general...
Any general operator. Yeah, if A and B are operators that do not commute with each other, then you have to have some formula that looks like that.
Okay.
If you're lucky, the commutator will commute with the variables and you'll be okay, but often it doesn't.
For some reason, I was under the misconception that that was for matrix operators.
So. Operators and matrices?
Yes.
Both.
Well, yeah.
One is often the realization of the other.
Oh, yeah. So.
Now, where was I? I wanted to put all of those expressions into here. So I would like to keep this bottom line, but not something else. So let's turn this into something that we can handle a bit more easily. So the product from J is it's unfortunate that you have to use the same label for the P's and the X's. All you have to do is remember that P is not the same thing as X. So, let's start off with this one. XF T of UF TN minus I TN minus 1. So that's going to be almost exactly as you said. We can regard this thing as being E to the I Hamiltonian evaluated at x equals x f and p equals p n minus 1 times delta t over h bar.
So you're evaluating different parts of the Hamiltonian in different...
Yep. It doesn't matter too much, except that we have here an XFPN minus 1, which will give us an E to the I P of N minus 1 X final over H bar. So that's this first term. So that one is that one. Then we get this one, Pn minus 1, Xn minus 1. This is e to the I, Pn minus 1, Xn minus 1 over h bar. Then we have this term. This is e to the I, h delta t over h bar. E to the minus I, Pn minus 2, x n minus 1 over h bar. Then we get this term, which is e to the I p
n minus 2 x n minus 2 over h bar. And you keep going until you get down to here. That's right. Now, the place that causes difficulty is the fact that you have terms that look like this. That's two different things, and in this limit we can regard this as being the following object. Can I get rid of these? Protest if... Right. This thing is going to give me an e to the I pn minus 1 into xn minus 1 minus xn minus x final, yeah, x final over h bar. So the way you want to think about this is to realize that if you calculated x dot differential respect to t at some point in this sort of discrete way of doing things, well, you've got these points xf, xn minus 1, xn minus 2, and that interval was delta t, then if you were going to find an approximation for x dot, you would say that x dot was approximated by x final minus xn minus 1 over delta t. So the way in which you can describe this is to replace it by, in that particular interval, e to the I pn minus 1, and let's call this x dot n minus 1 delta t over h bar. And again, there will be higher order terms that involve delta t squared because these things don't commute. So higher order terms neglected for the same reason. Since they vanish in the limit. More quickly than this one. So we can now reconstruct the whole thing as follows. I want to get rid of this bottom thing. So what do you get? You get product j is 1 to n minus 1, product j is 1 to n, dxj, dpj over 2 pi h bar, exponential of the Hamiltonian of x well, let's say this is going to be at t best way to write this. Remember that these now are all functions, so it's going to be the sum over j exponential of h of xj pj minus 1 delta t over h bar. That's from this term and then that one, and all the ones involving the Hamiltonian. And then every time you see this combination of things here, you can replace this by E, the sum of over J, I, P, J, X, J, dot, delta T over H bar. And that's almost the right form for the path integral. So you can see there are two terms here. I'm missing a minus sign here, aren't I? Because I defined it the wrong way round. Well, the right way round, there's a minus sign there, so there should be a minus sign here. So if you imagine taking the limit as n goes to infinity, remember these things are just functions, they're no longer operators. This will become e to the I over h bar integral over t from t initial to t final of the Hamiltonian as a function of p and x minus p x dot. And in front, we are going to have what is usually called just a sort of d of p and t x and t, which is defined by taking the limit as this thing goes to infinity. So this is you. It's all sitting in here. So d of t of t x of t is sort of the limit as n goes to infinity of product 1 over 2 pi h bar, which comes with a power of n. Well, I don't mean that. Let's not write it that way. Product over k is 1 to n dxj dpj over 2 pi h bar, and that's an n minus 1 there, and then there's the final one where you stick in the last last p. So this thing is sometimes called the Feynman measure. It is possible to make a justification of this that is rather more mathematically rigorous than this one, but I don't want to get into it. Yes, you have a question.
E to the I, pi, xi over h bar, in the, just before taking the limits.
E to the I,
the last factor of the previous time.
I don't think so. Yeah. It had another adjacent one to it.
Sorry?
It had another factor adjacent to it. This is all you get.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Photographic landing makes sure that we don't get things lost. There's always one more momentum integral than position integral.
Yes.
This formula is a remarkable formula. It is to be defined by taking the limit in this expression as n goes to infinity. That's really how you want to think about it. It's often not written in that form, but you know, if you want to have a precise equivalence with the operator version of the expression, you have to keep in mind this discretization, otherwise it doesn't work. We will do an example where we see precisely how it works in detail. However, if you stare at this formula, you'll see that there is something rather remarkable about it. What it's telling you is that if you want to evaluate a quantum mechanical amplitude of anything, what do you actually do? Remember that in this expression, these things are just functions of something classical, x as a function of t and momentum as a function of t. So the path integral only involves classical expressions that do not involve in any explicit way any operators. And what it says is that you integrate over all p's and x's this expression. So what does it mean by integrate over all p's and x's? Well, it's very hard to draw this. Well, actually, it's not so hard to draw this particular picture. So here is the phase space, the space of all x's and p's. The space of all coordinates and momentum. What it says is you start at some particular point and you integrate over all possible paths between the initial point and the final point. That's what this tells you to do. Integrate over all possible p's of t, all possible x's of t, obeying the appropriate boundary conditions. And weight your integral by this expression here. So it's over all possible paths in phase space. Weighted by e to the I h of x and p, integrated over all possible paths, minus p x dot, all divided by h bar. This is integrated over t, I guess. Put that down there. Furthermore, the measure, the thing you're integrating over, dx dp, is not just any old dx dp, it's a sort of magical dx dp. Because if you stare at this expression, what this really is an integral over the density of states. And to make it clear what I mean, it's the number of states between p and p plus dp and x plus dx. So in fact, it is a canonical Liouville measure on the phase space. So this is a remarkable formula. I tend to regard this formula as fundamental and defining the path integral. Others do not. What they do is they just work out something related to it. because h of p and x is of a very simple form, non-relativistically, h is p squared over 2m plus v of x. You see, the integral over p at each point in time is a Gaussian integral. It's e to the I something p squared and an e to the something px dot. That integral can be done. You probably want to do it in this expression because you've got here the factor of dpj over 2 pi h bar. Here you'd have the sum of ipj minus 1 squared over 2m, delta t over h bar. Then there's a potential term which doesn't matter, but this is just sitting in here, minus ipj xj dot delta t over h bar. And actually, it might have been better if I'd labeled that as pj minus 1, but it doesn't make any difference. So every time you see p, you can just replace it by the appropriate Gaussian integral. Remember that e integral of dp e to the minus ap squared plus bp was equal to root pi over a, e to the b squared over 4a. And there's a 2 pi h bar here. So there has to be a 1 over 2 pi h bar here. In our case, a is equal to I over 2m delta t over h bar. B is equal to minus I x dot delta t over h bar. So if you integrate out the momenta, you will pick up a factor of pi over pi squared gives me a 1 over pi. There's a 4 on the bottom, h bar squared. A is I delta t. And then there's a 2m h bar on top. So it's that to the power 1 half. E to the b squared, that's minus x dot squared. Well, there's no delta t in here. This is a delta t in here. I'm sorry. E to the minus x dot squared delta t squared over h bar squared. And we have to divide by 4a. So it's 4i delta t and a 2m h bar. So for each momentum integral, you're going to get, let's see if we can tidy this up, 1m over 2 pi h bar delta t and an I to the 1 half e to the minus x dot squared delta t m over 2 I h bar. So let's put the I on top. And I get that. At each point, meaning for each of these n integrals over momentum. So what do we get? I'll come to that.
This is for which expression?
We're going to stick it in this one. Here. So all of the n intervals over momenta I'm going to do. What do I end up with? End up with product from J is 1 to n minus 1 dxj. That's gone. This has become
e to the sum over j I into this thing, mx dot squared over 2. Take out a factor of h bar as well. Mx dot squared over 2. And the delta t, v we left alone. We didn't do anything to that. And then there was a horrible factor, this thing, m over 2 pi h bar delta t. And an I? Yeah, an I. Delta t. Which showed up with a factor of there were n integrals, so it happens to the big N over 2 times. If you take the limit as n goes to infinity, this is usually written in the following way. Integral d of x of t e to the I over h bar integral over t of a half mx dot squared plus v of x. Why have we got v? Surely we should have minus. What has happened? Sorry, where's my minus sign gone?
In your first integral, you have minus ap squared, whereas in your actual integral, the minus sign is on the.
Fine, okay, good.
So I end up with this expression. And this you should recognize here as just being the Lagrangian. So the whole thing is the integral d of x of t e to the minus I h bar integral over t of the Lagrangian. That is a different final expression for the path integral. This path integral is just as extraordinary as the previous one. What it says is that to evaluate an amplitude, to go from x initial to x final, you integrate over all paths in coordinate space. Starting at xi, ending at xf, weighted at each point by e to the this factor, m over 2 pi I h bar delta t to the half, and overall by a factor of e to the I e to the I s over h bar, where s is the action. Remember, the action is the integral over t of some path. So this is an alternative form of the path integral that just works in coordinate space, and some would say that was the natural way of doing it. What is unpleasant about this is that you have to stick in this factor everywhere. In practice, you don't need to bother, because this factor is just a sort of normalization factor, and you can always get normalization factors from completeness.
Where did it go in our limit? When we...
Oh, because it's over delta t. So
right. I am going to do an example in which you see where it goes in that limit. You might say it looks very peculiar, but in actual fact, you don't need to bother with it. So in practice, factor of whatever it is to the n over 2 that we were finding a little bit complicated to deal with
can be forgotten. That's because it really is just an overall normalization factor. So that if you computed this object up to an overall normalization, that's, if you think about, is the amplitude of a particle to go from x initial to x final, you could multiply by x initial, x final, and integrate over all x final, this time with weight 1, and this had better be equal to 1, indicating that the particle must have gone somewhere. So you can always determine an overall normalization factor by forgetting this and determining from this formula. Whatever it is to the n over 2, and try to take its limit. Equally well, you can forget this I, because it's just a phase factor, and phase factors don't matter in amplitudes too much. You could argue, of course, that this is an infinite factor, and you would be right, but it is the first of many infinities that you meet, and the answer is not to get anxious about it. So those are the two forms of the path integral that you come across when you try to construct things like this. Now, somebody protested that I had done something really, really bad, which was to use the Gaussian integral formulation. Can I get rid of this? So here is the bad thing I was accused of. At least I think this is what I was accused of. So I think, actually I want a minus sign here. I think what I was being accused of, I can't even remember who did it now, that I had evaluated this integral in a cavalier fashion. Is that what I was accused of? Good. Not so. Well, the answer is right, but I have to justify it. So this thing I wrote as a real integral, but of course it's not, because there's a factor of I here. Let's look at what happens in the complex plane. So let's replace this by a complex variable z. I guess I should call it z. Well, I don't know. In this part of the world, is the last letter of the alphabet z or z? Z, unlike south of the border. Right, okay, good. We will stick with that, because it's natural for me. So what I am being told to do in this integral is to start here and integrate along the real axis till I get up to there. And you were saying that there was a potential problem with convergence. But in actual fact, the easiest way to do this integral is to stick with this contour and deform it. As long as I don't find any singularities in deforming the contour, I'm not going to have any great difficulty with it. So I can deform it to look like that, where the slope through here is at pi by 4, the horizontal axis. That will give me the same integral. If I make the transformation near z equals 0 by putting z is equal to e to the I pi by 4, might as well actually call it s. Wait a minute. I really think I should have stuck to what I started with. I want a plus there. Please change that to plus. Then the integrand is the integral of e to the I pi by 4 ds e to the minus lambda s squared, as long as I'm just in this region here where I can describe the integral like that. And if I did this from minus infinity to plus infinity, which is of course not quite what I want to do, it's only approximately equal to this, then I will end up with e to the I pi by 4 root pi over lambda. As lambda goes to infinity, this falls off more and more steeply away from s equals 0. And so, as lambda goes to infinity, this thing certainly tends to this limit. You can, but I am not, Professor Bender will, I'm told, prove that that is all absolutely true. So the only question is whether you are going to believe me about that. How much time do I have left? None. Never mind. Let's boldly extend this to integrals of the following form. Integral from minus infinity to plus infinity, dz, e to the I lambda f of z, or some function f of z. How am I supposed to evaluate such integrals? There are sort of generalizations of this. So what we did here was to deform the integral so that the contour went over this maximum, And as you go away from the maximum here, it's falling off incredibly rapidly because it's just exponentially suppressed in a quadratic fashion. And so as you go off in this direction, then you get almost nothing very quickly. And I'm going to argue that deforming the contour involving these things doesn't change very much. In fact, you could probably succeed in convincing yourself that if you did that, it doesn't change anything, which is why this result is exact. So under a wide range of circumstances, what you want to do is to make this thing imitate this kind of behavior here. So suppose that f of z can be expanded near z equals z0. Then you can Taylor expand it. You get f of z is f of z0 plus z minus z0 f prime of z0 plus a half and then there's higher order stuff that hopefully will not be important. That's what happens if you do it near an arbitrary point. So if you did it near an arbitrary point, this kind of expansion, you would end up with integral minus infinity plus infinity dz, an e to the I constant which comes out, and then your first term would be e to the I lambda z minus z0 f prime of z0. If you think about integrals that look like this, they're zero except when lambda is zero. It's just a delta function. So these are nightmare integrals because they just everything just cancels out in some kind of oscillatory fashion. So if you try to expand around a general point, you'll get this oscillating integrand, and you won't get a very good estimate of what you're supposed to get. However, if you expand about a point where f prime of z0 is 0, in other words, an extremum of f, you'll get something a bit different. Higher order stuff, e to the I lambda f of z0. You'll get something which looks like that, and that is going to be approximately e to the I lambda f of z0. This is the same kind of thing that we had here, except that this would be now z0. So provided f double prime is positive, you will get here.
What does it mean for f that f double prime z not be positive if it could in general be complex? Since we're dealing
we have to fiddle around with the contour a bit more. So if this is positive and real, that's positive and real, then rotating z minus z0 with e to the I pi by 4 will make this whole thing negative, and you get something gaussian. So I will get 2 lambda more f double prime of z0. You might say, well, what about the higher order terms? Well, the higher order terms will fall off more rapidly in lambda. So as long as lambda is becoming large, the higher order terms will fall off more rapidly. Until they can be forgotten. Sometimes you can use them exactly, but often not. Then this thing will get modified. The example that I was thinking of was going to be the simple harmonic oscillator where that thing is positive. If this thing was complex, which I think was your question, then we have got to be a little more careful. You want to be able to choose this z minus z0 path to be such that you end up with, in general, that you end up with e to the minus something real times z minus z0 squared. Now there's obviously some direction in which you can do that because f double prime of z0 is a constant. So you can certainly do that. But whether or not that will come correspond to a sensible path is a moot point depending on what the value of f double prime actually is. So you have to be a bit careful about that. But if all you're interested in is the lambda goes to infinity limit, then you can use this formula. And that tells you how to do integrals of the form that we're being protested about. Rightly so. I now got lost. What was I trying to say? Yes.
You said lambda is, as lambda goes to infinity, the higher order things fall out. What is the guarantee? Because they find that f double prime is positive, real and positive, does not guarantee well, that the two integrals will be positive.
Yes, this is a very informal discussion of these integrals.
Really, the whole thing is a little bit more subtle than this. Carl Bender, when he comes here, is going to discuss the question of these things in much more detail than I'm going to. However, if you look at his book, which is in there, you'll find, I hope, a thorough discussion, although it's not the place I'd look for it. If I was going to look for it, I would look in a book called Asymptotic Something or Others by Olver, O-L-V-E-R. If you look in quantum mechanics books, I think you'll discover something that's even worse than this. But what will happen, you see, is that if you included these higher order terms, well, let's see. Suppose that there was a cubic term. Do I want to do this? Well, no one's protesting, so I'll try it. Suppose that you wanted me to include a cubic term. I want to do this in the reals, because I don't think it matters whether it's real or complex, because it will illustrate the point. So let's suppose that this is going to be the integral dz e to the I. So make this thing real. Then the next term is going to be an e to the I over 6 lambda f triple prime of z0, z minus z0 cubed. Now, what do I want to do? Well, I think the first thing to do is to rescale. Z. here, what will happen is we'll end up with a z minus z zero prime cubed over the square root of lambda. Then what you do is you take this thing down out of the exponential, because this is small. And you see that all these higher order terms die off more rapidly as lambda gets large. That's appropriate for what we want to do, because all of our integrals are of the form e to the I action over h bar. And in practice, h bar is small on the energy scales that we're usually interested in. And so that's the same thing as lambda becoming large. And so this kind of expansion will work. That this kind of idea where you expand things out like this is the origin of Feynman diagrams, which I certainly didn't want to get into, but I suppose we could do it if we wanted to. We want to do it? I think not. I think I want to do time to. Yeah, David will be doing that, so I guess I don't need to do that. But it will be less weird when you see it. There was some question over here.
No, should that be pi over 3 set time I said, like linear in set time I said now? Just cube?
No. What? Because it's e to the I this thing.
Yeah.
And I expand that thing out and I get 1 plus I over 6.
No.
And then it's cube. You will, of course, realize that you will be in big trouble if f double prime of z0 is 0, because then the leading order thing will be area functions as opposed to Gaussians. That will be a horrible mess. You don't want to think about that. I guess we should stop for today, otherwise we'll end up thinking of a lot of time. So, I was trying to do an example today, but I guess the example will have to wait until tomorrow.